And right now, welcome to the program, to Teresa Moran, a writer and organizer with the publication Labor Notes. Teresa, thanks so much for joining us tonight. On February 1st, as you wrote about recently, Indiana became the nation's 23rd, quote, right-to-work state. Protest at the state capitol followed, and others had organized low-profile informational protests at the Super Bowl game yesterday in Indianapolis. There wasn't a large protest that some people had discussed. But, Teresa, maybe you could just take us back to the impetus for this particular measure in Indiana, one of the first right-to-work states in the Midwest in decades. What's the significance of this?
So historically, right-to-work has mostly been confined to the South and certain states in the West that typically are not labor strongholds. Indiana is the first Rust Belt state to become a right-to-work state, and now there's a lot of fear that other states will fall like dominoes. So currently there are right-to-work bills introduced in Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, Maine, Maryland, and other states as well. So there's a real concern that this could spread and reduce the power of unions even further.
Explain right-to-work, the legislation called right-to-work. On the face of it, it sounds wonderful. Everybody's got a right to work, but it's a very blatantly anti-union measure. Tell us about it.
So at its core, what right to work does is it allows people to opt out of union membership but still benefit from being a union member and being represented by a contract. So folks are able to opt out of paying dues and also not sign up for the union. And what this does over time, it depletes the resources that the unions have to enforce the contract, bargain contracts, service their members, do the research required, and things like that. But even worse than that, like over time, if people are getting the benefits of representation for free, people will decide not to join the union. And a union's power is its showing of strength in numbers. But if membership declines, the union loses its power.
What is the ultimate goal here? Is it to weaken and destroy the labor union movement in this country with these coordinated efforts by Republican held governorships and state legislatures around the country? And by extension, does this not also translate to an attack directly on the Democratic Party, which certainly gets a lot of its contributions for election campaigns from unions?
Absolutely. It's both an attack on the Democratic Party and an attack on unions nationally, an attack on workers' ability to negotiate their own wages and contracts. It's no surprise, it's no shock that similar bills are popping up in states across the country. Most of these bills are modeled on ALEC legislation. ALEC is a membership organization with both corporate members and legislators, where model legislation is proposed by corporations. You basically have Coca-Cola, the Koch brothers, Walmart drafting bills, legislators voting to approve them as ALEC policy, and then you see these bills being introduced in different states or, similar, identical bills. And, right to work is one such example.
So now,
this is a very coordinated attack on workers' rights as well as on the Democratic Party.
Now, ALEC that you mentioned, the American Legislative Exchange Council, was behind a coordinated attack on public employee unions' right to collectively bargain. We saw that attack in a bunch of states, including Wisconsin and Ohio. Voters in Ohio had a referendum and overturned that law, and now there's an effort in Wisconsin, people I'm sure are aware, where there's a recall election scheduled soon in Wisconsin to take out the Republican governor, Scott Walker, who was behind that move. But tell us about who's behind the American Legislative Exchange Council. Who's funding that in all these anti-union measures across the country?
It's the corporate members of ALEC that are funding these measures.
Do you name any of the corporations that are big funders of this move?
That are big funders? Well, I named a few. The Koch brothers are often named and got named a lot in Wisconsin. Walmart, Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, ExxonMobil, Verizon, UPS.
So it's some of the biggest corporations in the country we're
yes.
talking about. What's been the response in Indiana from the union activists locally? I know that there were some protests. Thousands of people came to the state capitol in Indianapolis and some informational picketing at the Super Bowl. I guess there was a conscious effort not to disrupt or get people angry about any kind of distraction from the Super Bowl itself. But what was the response and what's their next move?
The response has been and had been both to mobilize people out to the protests, but also to educate both the general public and union's own members, just in anticipation of such a bill passing. Because the goal right now is to educate members, to inform them on why it's important to maintain membership. Now, on a larger scale, folks are considering attempting to win back the legislature, but that's going to be a challenge. It's not as close as it was in Wisconsin. Or is in Wisconsin, rather. So.
Yeah, from what I understood, Democrats, or certainly an ally of labor in Indiana, have not held the state Senate since the 1970s. So
yes.
it's quite a conservative state.
It is quite a conservative state. So I think while folks will try to win some of those offices for the Democrats, it's going to be an uphill battle.
In your article about the Indiana right to work legislation, you discussed the fact that upwards of 70% of the public polled in Indiana would like to have a referendum on this issue. Do you know where public opinion stands on right to work itself? If there was a referendum, if that was allowed to go forward, you think the public would support it or oppose it?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that many people are confused about right to work. You know, like you said yourself, on the surface, right to work sounds great. Right? People don't understand what it means. And even if people just hear it as, you know, a financial question, I think people don't understand that at its core, it's a question of fairness. You know, if folks are getting the benefits of union representation but are not paying the dues, if folks are getting the benefits of union representation but are not being active members of the union, I mean, that's not fair. A friend of mine, David Williams, who's in Indiana, he's been staunch opponent of right to work for years and has been educating folks on it. Put it this way to say this is the first time in history that the government is forcing a private organization to provide services to non-contributors. I mean, that's crazy, right?
It certainly is something that flies in the face of logic that if members of a union are getting services, whether it's any number of benefits that accrue to union members, they should fairly pay for it. But this, as you said, is politically motivated by people who want to weaken or destroy unions altogether. It seems that using the term right to work really plays into the hands of those people who are or pushing the measure. It might, and I've heard it referred to by a different name, right to work for less, as a more accurate description.
It is a more accurate description. Studies have shown that in right-to-work states, average income is $1,500 less a year in right-to-work states than in non-right-to-work states. People in right-to-work states are also less likely to have employer-paid health care or pensions. And folks who support right-to-work have argued that it creates jobs, that it makes a state a more attractive place for businesses to come into. Evidence does not support that at all. The only evidence there is, the only statistical measures there are in right to work show that it reduces wages and job security.
Well, running out of time, Teresa, but I want to ask you this question. As the national labor movement responds to this Alex-sponsored coordinated attack, trying to spread the legislation, the right to work legislation across the country, what has the AFL-CIO been doing to counter this move? What has AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka been saying about it?
Now, Trumka has been saying that legislators who've supported right to work should consider themselves in precarious positions. But, you know, above and beyond that, I really can't comment.
What do you see, from covering this issue, What do you think labor should be doing around the country to counter this? What effectively you think could work in their favor at this point?
You know, since so many states are facing right-to-work bills like the one that just passed in Indiana right now, I think education is crucial. I think that both union members and non-union members alike need to be educated on what right-to-work really means and the importance of unions. And I think that needs to be happening. Quite frankly, I think that should have happened earlier in Indiana. And I think that states that are currently facing right-to-work now should take note and start educating now. There should be door-to-door education campaigns. There should be anti-right-to-work commercials. There should be really strong member education programs in the unions. I think that's what labor needs to be doing.
I found it interesting that in a lot of this discussion around the country about what was going on in Wisconsin when there was an attack on legislation that took away collective bargaining rights from public employees, that there were many polls that indicate people do not want to see teachers, policemen, and firemen, you know, have their rights as workers taken away from them, which I thought after decades of anti-union propaganda from the big corporations and their supporters in politics, that we wouldn't see that strong support. But it does seem that around the country, people are not, they're not bent on killing off unions like some of these corporations are.
No, I don't think that people are. And I think particularly, as in Wisconsin, when folks could put a face on the victims of the legislation, my teacher, the local firefighter, then people are much more apt to support unionized workers. When it becomes less of this abstract policy and more a policy that affects people in a specific way, you know, people generally support unions. I come down on the sides of labor.
And I think, you know, one of the things that is important to recognize is the fact that one of the building blocks for the American middle class over the last 100 or more years has been labor unions. And if you gut and weaken or destroy labor unions, the middle class is ever more threatened, certainly in a very precarious place at present, but certainly will be worse off without labor unions.
Absolutely.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for updating us on some of the I guess, angering news from Indiana. And hopefully the labor unions will rise to oppose this. We'll see what happens. But appreciate reporting on this. And leave our listeners with the way they can read your articles there at Labor Notes, one of the preeminent labor-oriented publications in the country. What's the website, Teresa?
Okay, so that is www.labornotes.org.
Labornotes.org. Okay, well, appreciate your work, and thanks for making time for us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Teresa. Bye-bye. Thanks.